You pressed play on this podcast with the click of curiosity. It is another dimension, a dimension of mind, a dimension where nothing is sacred and everything is explainable. You're streaming into a land of both inside and outside, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into the midside.
Welcome to the midside, where there's no place like here. I'm your host, Justin M. Wozniewski, and if my voice sounds a little wonky or I'm a little tired or a little slow and my repartee isn't quite there this week, please excuse me. First of all, I'm dealing with either allergies or a cold or trying to fight off another sinus infection. I don't know what the fuck it is about California, but it just is. I've been here too long and it's not only destroying me psychologically, but it's destroying my sinuses, I think. And I think Daniel can speak to that a little bit more. Also, this is the morning of day three of Zack Snyder's 3-day screening event. So I am like just exhausted from watching a 3-hour cut of Watchmen and then eating dinner for 45 minutes and then listening to Zack Snyder, Larry Fong, Jackie O'Haley, and Deborah Snyder talk for like 90 minutes. And then also putting up with the weird energy of all the like fans that were there. So you're just gonna have to excuse me. I mean, guys, you got a solo episode from me last week. I carried a whole episode, and you still want me to carry the next game? Even Tom Brady needs help sometimes, people. Speaking of which, joining me this trip from our nation's capital, Daniel T. Richards.
Does that make me Julian Edelman or Bill Belichick?
Julian Edelman. I'm like Tom Brady and Bill Belichick in one for this podcast.
Oh, I see. I see. Nothing like an ego on the post. Nothing like that. No Robert Mueller joke to start the show.
I don't know what to say about that.
Listen to anyone in punditry.
If you have a good joke, I want to hear it, because all I know is the report's coming or something, and like half the people are mad about it and half the people are saying shut the fuck up about it, which is basically what Twitter is 90% of the time. So I have no idea what's going on with that.
The Mueller report is to political reality as M. Night Shyamalan's The Happening was to movies. Nothing is going to happen. Nothing. We're all going to build up to this great moment where stuff's going to be leaked and it's going to say nothing. And then people on both sides of Twitter are going to fight over about how much nothing is there. Is there something in the nothing, or is there really nothing in the nothing? And meanwhile, we'll all go on with our Zack Snyder-loving movie-watching lives.
Isn't that all commentary on Twitter nowadays?
Yeah. No, this is no different. I loved the Drudge headline, like, Washington, D.C. gripped with Mueller report. I live in Washington, D.C., turns out, and I've not talked to any human being within the District of Columbia about the Mueller report.
The only thing being gripped in D.C. is people's wallets from getting pickpocketed.
There you go. Zing, whoever the hell that is, since we have it.
That's not where I would have went with a gripping joke in D.C., but I'm
a pervert. That's in DuPont. So that's different.
Washington
also
D.C.
joining us.
Gripped than Robert Kraft's. Never mind.
There you go. There's a good one. There is a good one. Also joining us, as you've already heard, identifying as a woman to forego his gay white male privilege. I can't even say that with a straight face, by the way. Every time I want to say straight white male privilege, like it's so absurd that it doesn't even make any sense to say. William Green from Dale's Lawn. Welcome.
Hello, hello. Yeah, just in case you guys are new to the show, that was an actual story from, a season or a season and a half ago about how gay.
Do we know at this point? It could have been like privilege. 5 years at this point.
Yeah, who knows? So yeah, I enjoyed the vacation last week from the show. Did a bunch of stupid things around the house that resulted in a awesome clean yard. My roommate did most of that work, and the weather has been interesting. I think it's allergies, Justin, because I have been crazily sneezing and everything all this week. I think the super bloom is hitting us in California. I mean, what a world we live in. We got too much rain, so now everything in the world is blooming, And so I wish this weather would stay for forever, but I know it's going to start getting hot soon. So
you're just a drought denier, William. You're a drought denier.
I'm a drought denier.
There's no rain in California.
That's one of my favorite stories, though, is where people are like, oh, now the drought's over, but California has other problems because of so much rain. It's like this state is goddamn fucking full of Goldilocks. And I don't just mean because everyone's blonde. It's absurd. But I mean, that's the other thing, too, like the allergies thing. Daniel, I think I've talked to you about this before off show. I never had allergies before I moved to California. And then a few years ago, I went to the doctor and the guy was like, yeah, you have like super extreme, like the worst kind of allergies ever. I'm like, what the fuck? Like, I was perfectly fine before I moved here.
You're allergic to California. It happens sometimes.
Yeah, same thing. I did have allergies growing up, but they weren't the kind that were like seasonal or pollen or whatever. There was like, don't eat turkey or don't eat corn, which is weird. But when I moved to California, my face started attacking the rest of me. And I was curious. And so I went to essentially a guy who is the Dr. House of reality in Southern California. And he did like a 100-part diagnostic test on me and came up with these two solutions. He said, one,
it's not lupus.
Zyrtec every day for the rest of your life. And that might solve it. Or two, I'm going to have to do total reconstructive surgery on your face.
But to be fair, like, that does sound like a house solution.
I'll try the Zyrtec. And that helped immensely. And then eventually I had to also take Flonase. Now I've weaned myself back off the Flonase. Now I moved back to the East Coast. And I'm still taking Zyrtec every day. But nonetheless, California ruined my sinuses and destroyed me forever. So go F yourself, Gavin Newsom.
All right, that sounds like a good way to end the intro here. And actually, I think we can say go F yourself to another state this week. Let's do it in the news with Daniel T. Richards.
Well, I assure you, Mr. Listener, it really is that bad. These aren't harmless criminals. This isn't just a fad.
So before we get to the craziness in the news this week, I want to remind folks that we have something called Patreon. Patreon's a platform that allows content creators to get a few bucks every time they produce a piece of content from the loving fans. That's you. You loving fans can choose to go to patreon.com/themidside and give us a couple bucks. We really appreciate it. Helps us keep the lights on. So on Monday, New Jersey Governor Phil Murphy signed a bill banning cashless retail stores and restaurants in the Garden State. Murphy's signature makes New Jersey the second state in the U.S. to ban cashless stores. Justin, guess which one was the first?
Massachusetts.
Correct. Not California, but your beloved home state. But that was all the way back in 1978. So more recently, New Jersey's move to ban cashless stores and restaurants follows that of Philadelphia, which banned cashless stores earlier this month. Philadelphia's legislation was a reaction to a growing number of stores that only accepts credit cards or requires customers to pay with an app, like Amazon's new Amazon Go stores. So much like Philadelphia's new law, New Jersey's law makes an exception for parking garages and car rental companies where a credit card is required upfront for incidentals. There's also an exemption carved out for some airport stores. So proponents of cashless stores say that they prevent theft, speed up customer convenience, and are generally more modern. Opponents say that cashless stores unfairly disadvantage people who don't or can't have credit cards and who don't want the fees associated with prepaid debit cards.
Women and minorities hardest hit.
That's right. According to New Jersey State Assemblyman Paul, I'm not making this up, Moriarty, quote, many people don't have access to consumer credit, and an effort by retail establishments to ban the use of cash is discriminatory towards those people. Justin, do you feel discriminated against because you don't have access to consumer credit?
I mean, I feel discriminated against, but it has nothing to do with consumer credit. This is what I don't understand. First of all, can we just talk about the Massachusetts thing for like 2 seconds?
Okay.
Who in 1978 was like, we need to ban cashless stores? Was that like a time traveler? Did he come back? Is this like James Franco from that miniseries on Hulu about the JFK nomination or assassination? Did he like go back in time and then afterwards he's like, I'm really bored. Let's see if I can get cashless stores banned. 1978?
And were the legislatures confused at that point? Or was this like an alternative libertarian movement to have like all gold coin stores? And they're like, no. You got to take cash. Got to take fiat currency. Because at the time, yeah, that seems ludicrous. They're just well ahead in their statist curve.
Well, that's the thing, too. Like, I dump on California a lot, but I don't want to underplay how bad Massachusetts is either. It's just that Massachusetts is they're just different kind of leftism, right? Massachusetts is a very intellectual elitist leftism. California is a very common man narcissist elitism.
William,
were you going to say something?
Yeah, I had two thoughts on this. First one, and this will be, if you're playing the drinking game, this is your Adam Carolla quote. Access? Is there someone like someone at the bank like saying, oh, you're black, you can't have a credit card? Like, what does this mean? Again, we're
not even a credit card.
Access.
William,
a debit card. Anything.
Right, exactly. Can you not get a bank account? Like, how hard is it every paycheck to put $50 in the bank to have a debit card? And then once you have a bank account, it's not that hard to get a credit card, is it?
And here's the second stupid thing. There's a second stupid thing. Every other country, like, this is the height of narcissism, right? Every other country, they pay in cashless on their phone way cheaper than we do with our debit cards and credit cards. If you go to countries in Africa, China, and Asia, they do all digital on their phone. And they've got, outside of China, they've got good privacy protections, and it's all very smooth and cheap, and all you have to do is have a phone, and you can do this thing. And if poor people in Africa can do it, you're saying poor people in America can't do it? Like, it doesn't make any sense, right?
Well, there are only black people in Africa, so there's no discrimination against them. There's no white people there keeping them down,
so
right?
So the banks don't prevent access there. I get it.
Right. Because there are no white people in Africa.
None. Zero, especially in the southern part.
Okay, if I say that enough, will people realize I'm not serious? I feel like someone's going to take that soundbite out of context and just ream into me.
Well, you know, I was mentioning before the show that I need more drops, so that's probably a good drop right there.
That's a very good drop if you want to embarrass me every episode.
Right, because there are only white people in Toto's Africa.
Wow.
Yeah, okay. So this is insane and feels very patronizing, doesn't it? Like, oh, you poor people, and by poor people in this instance we mean minorities, you don't have access to consumer credit or debit cards or non-cashless options. So we got to protect you. Wasn't there this famous video of, I forget, maybe his name is Ari, but I forget his last name, who goes into like some of the worst places in New York and asks low-income people, for instance, like, do you have access to ID? And they, of course, look at him like he's an insane person and say, of course we have access to ID. Do you think we're idiots? Like,
yes, I remember this.
Like, and then he cuts back to these college elite leftists and asks about, requiring ID to vote. And they all talk about, oh, poor people don't have access. They don't know how to get IDs, etc. Cut back to actual poor people going, here's my driver's license. Do you think I'm a moron? And they're getting offended. So this feels like the exact same thing to me. Of course, people have access. But so we don't frame this article in the collectivist nonsense in which it is framed, how about we frame it this way, which could be the two words of the year: property rights. Whose business is it? Is it the government's business? Is it the public's business? Or is it the individual store owner's business or the corporation's business who gets to decide what method of payment they want to accept? Why is it that there is the arguments are cashless stores prevent theft, speed up customer convenience, and are generally more modern? Why isn't the argument, this is my store and I have a right to do with it what I choose because property rights back the F off?
Well, Daniel, do you want the really cynical answer to that question?
I always want the really cynical answer.
This is just government getting out ahead of this to maintain control. I mean, you made the joke about the fiat currency earlier and forcing people to pay with it. That's 100% what this is. The only way they can maintain control is to outlaw all the other forms. Remember, I said this on the show. You know, this is the same thing as when I said, you know, oh, this isn't good that California legalized marijuana because they're just going to regulate the fuck out of it. This is the same thing. I said on this show at some point, they're going to make Bitcoin, what is that? Cryptocurrency. They're going to make cryptocurrency illegal because it's a threat to them. It's a threat to their centralized banking. Well, this is the first step towards that.
Yeah, Massachusetts way ahead on the Bitcoin curve.
That's what I'm saying. How?
But I just want to make a broader point here about all the arguments I hear, you know, for or against regulation or for or against various laws that have to do with business, et cetera. And the arguments always come from this consumer welfare mentality, like, well, if we do this, it will hurt consumers. Or if we don't do this, it'll hurt consumers. And I'm over here going, well, what about the business welfare? What about the individual owner welfare? What about the guy whose property it is? What about his welfare?
Well, and it's a double whammy too, because you're talking about consumers as if they were some giant super organism, right? Like, what about me, the consumer, the individual consumer who wants to shop at an Amazon Go store in Philly, right? Now I'm not able to do it. My rights as a consumer is being discriminated against.
I have an idea.
Oh,
based upon everything you gentlemen are saying.
Is it bloody revolution?
Basically, but less bloody, just revolution. So I think all store owners should now go, we only accept cash. And because of that, don't use receipts. And because of not using receipts and having cash, they can just fuck with how many taxes they're paying because there's no paper trail.
Ooh. You heard it here first, folks. Defraud the government.
That's what I'm saying. Do it. If I end up dead,
that's how the mid-side was canceled.
They canceled because I'm going to be shot in the head tomorrow. Jesus. But you know what? I met Zack Snyder, so I can die a semi-happy man. All that's left is to meet Tom Brady.
That's right.
And he still has an erection.
Speaking of, no. Okay. So here's a story that got some play in American media, but you're not hearing interesting parts of it. And I think that's why it's coming up here on the midside. Johnny Depp, remember him, has filed a counter lawsuit against Amber Heard, accusing her of domestic abuse. Indeed, Los Angeles, this is why I said Los Angeles, that's the dateline, but it's because it's from an India Times article and I feel weird about it, but here we go. Actor Johnny Depp has accused his former wife, Amber Heard, of domestic abuse. Depp, who filed a $50 million defamation case against Heard earlier this month, denied her accusations of domestic abuse against him, claiming that she used to abuse him instead. In the counter lawsuit, Depp has accused Heard of being a perpetrator of domestic abuse and alleged that she attacked him numerous times, including an incident where Heard violently threw a bottle of vodka at him, which severed his middle finger on his right hand and shattered the bones, causing him to require surgery. Heard has also been accused of punching Depp while he was in bed, kicking him in numerous occasions, and staging attacks. Depp's lawsuit calls Heard's allegations of domestic abuse against him a hoax. For instance, quote, unaware that members of Mr. Depp's security team were mere feet away, Ms. Heard falsely began yelling, "Stop hitting me, Johnny." The interaction culminated with Ms. Heard facing making false allegations that Mr. Depp struck her with a cell phone, hit her, and destroyed the penthouse. There were multiple eyewitnesses to the hoax. So, Justin, what do you make of all this? In the era of Me Too and believe all women and all men are evil, et cetera. How do we begin to sort through this?
Well, I think the first thing is, and I know William's probably going to go in a little bit of a different perspective on this because I may sound too much like the American media here, but the first thing is it's not really our responsibility to sort through this. The whole point of having a legal system is for them to take care of it. How much time do I have to figure out what the fuck happened here? I mean, do I have to worry about every time celebrities get in fights and what the fuck happens? Like, dude, fucking just go to court and figure this shit out. This is why I don't read TMZ. But this is the same thing of like with the college cheating scandal where people are like, what do you think? I think I don't have time to worry about this bullshit. Okay, so that's the first thing. How do we sort it out? But what you're really getting
and
at...
And that ends the show. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen.
No. I was going to continue here.
Oh, okay.
What you're getting at is there are interesting implications here, right? Because this idea that Amber Heard is claiming Johnny Depp was abusing her when she was really the abuser, if it was a man and that was the story, Amber Heard was the man in the relationship and that was the story, it'd be talking about how he's not only abusing her physically, he's abusing her psychologically. This is the cycle of abuse. He's gaslighting her and he's lying to make it seem like he's the one who didn't do it. And everyone would be completely on her side. But now it still seems like everyone is completely on her side when I guess there's video evidence and stuff. I mean, look. Now, I'm going to get really gendered here, okay? So fuck off all you people out there who are going to get mad at me for being gendered. Is the dude really, like, is it in the character of most guys to lie and be like, yeah, she threw a bottle at me and it severed my finger and shattered my bones? Like, that's quite a fucking lie. Dudes usually do not lie to that level. Like, it's, you know, that's more of like an emotional type of lie, right? Where you, like, go over the top. And I mean, it is Johnny Depp, so maybe he goes over the top with that. But how do you make that claim without evidence? It's just, I can't even picture that. Like, did she think it was a prop bottle? Like, she's like, oh, if I throw this at him, it's just going to shatter instantly because it's dummied up to blow up in that way. So I really don't know.
I'm not going to make this a gendered thing, but in terms of lying,
I did.
Yeah, I know. You went there. In terms of lying, there is a strange specificity to it. When you typically you don't lie with that level of specificity unless you're sociopathic. Sorry, there we go.
I don't even know if Johnny Depp could be capable of being a sociopath. Like with the way the different roles he's taking and everything, I think he's just so all over the place.
Yeah. So William, there's some other elements to this story that maybe this particular news outlet didn't get into, but anything you want to fill us in on?
Yeah, well, I think Justin kind of foreshadowed the direction I want to go with this. So I also posted in our Discord.
It's like
channel.
I'm good at the show thing.
If you're on Discord, you could see a TMZ story from 2016. Johnny Depp cuts off finger in fit of rage, Amber claims. Johnny Depp accidentally cut off his fingertip in a fit of rage, then dipped the stump in dark blue paint and wrote on the wall, in paint and blood, the name Billy Bob, the actor whom Johnny accused Amber Heard of cheating, according to Amber and her people. This is so
whoa.
So this is why I wanted.
Did she get this from Tim Burton? Is this a scene Tim Burton wrote?
This is why I wanted to talk about this story because we have obviously a toxic relationship right between these two people, and like Justin says, I don't want to try and judge who's what here, but things don't look good for Amber Heard, right? Like, this is crazy that her people put out this story in 2016, and Johnny's claiming that she's kind of doing this to further her career. And if we go back to this story, you can see, and this is just one of many stories that her and her team put out throughout this whole endeavor. Like, this all seems like a crazy stunt to take advantage of a guy in the climate of Me Too. And it's just really crazy to think that someone would be this dangerous and manipulative. And I think that's
you know
kind
how
of
this
the
is
point.
Toxic.
And the other thing the story mentions is there's tons of surveillance video that's been submitted to the court to back up Johnny's version of events. Now, again, I'm not trying to judge us. That's what the court's going to do. But like, man, oh man, does this sound crazy and over the top?
You know how you know this is toxic and over the top? The name he wrote is Billy Bob for like Billy Bob Thornton. How old is Amber Heard?
32.
She's 32?
Isn't that what the story said?
Oh,
he's
wow.
50-something, she's 32.
Okay, well, so there's still the difference there, right? So it's not like Johnny Depp like cut off his finger. I'm not saying he did. I'm just saying in this hypothetical situation. I'm not taking anyone's side. It's not like he cut off his finger and he wrote up Chris on the wall for like Chris Hemsworth or Chris Pratt. Right? Like if that happened, you'd just be like, okay, that's a little weird. But he literally wrote up the name Billy Bob because this girl is going from Johnny Depp to Billy Bob Thornton. Like somebody's got daddy issues, maybe? Like I get it. Everyone loves Johnny Depp, but then you go to Billy Bob Thornton. Did anyone watch Bad Santa and they're like, you know what? I really want to fuck Billy Bob Thornton.
I did not have that reaction
with a baseball
at all.
Yes. I'm not gonna make any. You're making some very interesting lines of argument today, Justin. I just want to be clear. I don't totally follow the logic, but it's fine. It's your show.
Wait, what don't
you
follow?
In some manic state.
What don't you follow?
why the lying thing is a woman issue, and now you know, you'd never go from Johnny Depp to Billy Bob Thornton. Tell that to Arnold Schwarzenegger, by the way. Anyway,
that's different
because he's got a penis.
The maid could have been hot. We don't know what the maid looked like.
He was not.
We don't know.
Yes, we know what the maid looked like.
We do?
She was grotesque. Yes.
Okay. Well, when you're married to a Kennedy, what do you expect? Okay. I also did not say lying is a woman thing.
Clause. The Kennedy exemption. I forgot.
Yeah, you forgot that. That's because you're not from Massachusetts. Okay. No, here's the problem, Daniel. This is why you can't figure out what's going on right now.
Okay.
One of the things I really appreciated about the way Zack Snyder was he was just literally just saying whatever was on his mind. So I'm kind of just doing the same thing now.
Gotcha. It's stream of quote unquote consciousness.
Yeah. Gotcha. Quote unquote consciousness.
Yeah. Excellent. Well, let's move on from the arbitrary to the hilarious. And in what is an early runner for my favorite story of the year, maybe until we get to the next story, but Poppy Apocalypse. Yes, Poppy Apocalypse, a small California city overrun, Justin, by thousands of tourists declares a public safety crisis.
Thousands of Asians.
This story has a little bit of everything. Hillsides. This is how the story begins, by the way. This is by Allison Chu of the Washington Post. Hillsides,
Asian,
blanketed in brightly colored flowers, are often a blissful, at times even calming sight. But for one small city in Southern California, the idyllic scenes have become a chaotic nightmare. The Poppy Apocalypse. The harbingers of destruction. Tens of thousands of flower-crazed tourists. Officials in Lake Elsinore, California, located just an hour southeast of Los Angeles, announced Sunday that they had closed off access to their famed California Golden Poppy Fields after, quote, Disneyland-sized crowds inundated the city of about 66,000 over the weekend, straining resources and creating a public safety crisis. Quote, this weekend has been unbearable, the city said in Sunday's announcement, which was shared across social media platforms. We will evaluate all options next week, including ways to shut this down. We know it has been miserable and has caused unnecessary hardships for our entire community. The post included a graphic with a prominent red X over a photo of the poppy fields and large red text that read, no more shuttles or entrance, no viewing or visiting. It also featured several, quote, pointed hashtags, such as hashtag poppy shutdown, hashtag poppy nightmare, and hashtag is it over. City officials did not respond to requests for comment late Sunday. This is the result of a natural phenomenon called a super bloom, wherein wildflowers blossom at a higher than normal rate following a period of unusual rainfall and favorable temperatures, the Los Angeles Times reported. Because of the proximity to Walker Canyon, an ecological reserve spanning 490 acres, Lake Elsinore has been featured on several lists of places people should visit if they want to see a super bloom. In fact, the city officials even earlier this year welcomed visitors. Kim Cousins, president of the Lake Elsinore Valley Chamber of Commerce, told the Times that they were open for business and those hills were covered with millions of poppies, quote, it's on, as they say. Justin, how have you been adversely affected by Poppy Apocalypse?
Well, we've already talked at the top of the show about my apparent allergic reaction. I guess maybe that's coming up from Lake Elsinore. But Daniel, did you just break some sort of copyright law by reading the entire article on air?
I wish that was the entire article. The article goes on for another 600 words at least.
I just know you enjoy this story because that's the most you've ever read out of a single article, I think.
Oh my God, I love it so much.
Look, there's so much in this story that is just, it's just so California. This is one of the most California stories I've ever heard in my entire life. So let's get down to what's really going on here, okay? The first thing is, there's one reason this is happening, and it's called Instagram, okay? All of these people are just going there to take pictures for their Instagram. There's this new phenomenon that I fucking hate in our generation and the younger generation. Like, have you heard of this place called The Happy Place, Daniel, William?
Isn't that a show?
Yeah, I thought it was a show.
It is
a
show.
The Good Place.
That's The Good Place, yeah.
Okay. The Happy Place is where Robert Kraft went.
Yes, exactly. Now, that would make more sense if people wanted to take pictures there. No, also the Museum of Ice Cream. Have you heard of the Museum of Ice Cream?
Are these like just social media pop-ups?
So, yes.
I was in a mall yesterday and there were these little cubes called selfie cubes. And yep. You could go in them and just take a photo with a somewhat moderately interesting background.
Yes. That's what these places are.
Selfie cubes.
So they sell tickets and they give you a time and then you walk through each room and each room is set up differently, like a shitty art museum. And you go in there and it's like, oh, I'm going to take a picture jumping into a pot of gold. And then they give you that and you put the boomerang on Instagram. And that's the same thing. A couple years ago, I went to a pumpkin patch with my girlfriend down in Irvine. It was fucking, first of all, it was mainly Asians, but that might have been because it's Irvine. But it was fucking people everywhere taking pictures with pumpkins. You couldn't even take a picture with a pumpkin in the background without other people in the background. Like, you take a picture and there's just like an Asian family wandering in the background of your picture because there's just so many fucking people there. This is the second thing about California. So the first thing is this narcissism, right? The second thing is there's just so many Asian immigrants who love cameras and taking pictures that they need excuses. But the third thing here is, I thought California was a place where there were things to do. You have really run out of things to do that you have to drive to Lake Elsinore to take pictures with the flowers? That you need to buy a ticket to the happy place?
People,
I thought California was the center of culture.
People lined up at 5:30 in the morning to be taken up by tram to go see poppies, Justin.
It's fucking watch the Wizard of Oz, you motherfuckers.
This seems incredibly strange to me because I grew up in Michigan and we had poppies too. And they're pretty and they always grew in the yard and then I don't know. It just seems weird to me, right? Like, I guess I could see if you're really, like, it's really pretty, but, like, why, yeah, it's just tons of people. Like, you can see in the pictures in the news story, just tons of people walking around. But I wanted to follow up on this. So I looked up Steve Manos, the Lake Elsinore mayor, and this story was all doom and gloom. But it looks like this mayor, we should be nominating him for governor, man. He had a press conference the day after that. They got everything straightened out. They've got, like, special traffic plans in place. They've got a shuttle. They're really trying to take advantage of this, which for me is, like, good for you, little town. I mean, can you imagine if someone did that? Like, if someone actually said, wait, there's, you know, 60,000 homeless people in L.A. and actually did something about it here. Like, here they're like, hey, we've got all these people that are here. We need to get, you know,
I've got it.
Have special traffic. And then we're going to have
special
routes.
Got it. William, we just solved the homeless problem. So all you have to do is make something called the encampment where you charge people to go take pictures with different groups of homeless people. They walk through the encampment and then you pay the homeless people the money you make from that.
Yeah. The virtue signaling.
Called the plus hashtag super gloom.
Yeah. Super gloom. Yeah.
Yeah. That's what it's called. It's called the encampment and you go in there and you take the pictures and you post them with the hashtag super gloom.
Make the homeless an Instagram story. That's how we solve this. Perfect.
Hey, elect me mayor of Los Angeles.
All over it. One of my favorite elements to this story is certainly it's the photo that accompanies this story that is, I don't know, 30-ish people, 35-ish people, half of whom are kneeling down with a cell phone taking a photo of a poppy.
Hey, Daniel, how many of them are Asian?
Exact same Instagram photo. I can't accurately say. I don't know how these people identify.
That's right. They could be transracial. How dare you?
That's right. But it's at least 65.
I'm going to count.
At least. Okay. But my favorite part of this story is, again, a suppressed property part of this story, which is that these are public lands that the government just said are closed now. Don't come. You're not allowed to come to this public land because hashtag poppy nightmare. This is ludicrous on its face and shows you why public property per se is a stupid idea. But it reminds me of the one time that I decided when I was moving from California to Austin and my my then girlfriend at the time, and I said, you know what, we're driving anyway, let's go see the Grand Canyon. Neither of us really cares. We suspect it's going to look like a giant hole in the ground. We said, let's go see the Grand Canyon. We get almost to the Grand Canyon, and the radio announces to us, the federal government is closed, and the Obama administration has closed the Grand Canyon.
An impressive feat of architecture, to close the Grand Canyon.
They're like that. They're like an MLB team in the rain. They just ran some guys with a tarp across it and closed the Grand Canyon. Like, what the heck? What is the point of having public property? What is the point of having a space that no one owns if you just, oh, it's closed now. You can't go because we said so. The overlords said so. I thought it wasn't supposed to have overlords. I thought it was supposed to be public property. But no, the overlords have said, no, you can't go see the Grand Canyon. So this is all dumb.
So when planes were flying over, did they make everyone pull the shades down? Sorry, the Grand Canyon's closed. Can't look.
That's right. Such a ridiculous.
They use augmented reality to obscure. They pixelated that area so you couldn't see it.
Oh, no, they just replaced it with the Marianas Trench, and they're like, oh, no one will notice.
Hey, I have a question. Do you think Parker Posey is really mad right now that it's poppies and not posies?
Who?
Actress Parker Posey, because she's like, that would have been a great marketing thing.
Hashtag Poseypocalypse?
Yeah, move on.
Okay. Speaking of things, millennials.
That was a good one.
I don't know who that is. So, AOC, you might know her as I do, as Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, this week made news again, but not for something she said, but for something someone said about her. Time reporter Charlotte Alter tweeted, at AOC and I were born the same year. She was a Dunkaroos kid. I liked fruit roll-ups. People our age have never experienced American prosperity in our adult lives.
All right, stop, Daniel. I'm going to stop you right there.
Okay.
She literally went from talking about preferring Dunkaroos or fruit roll-ups to saying you've never experienced prosperity. Fuck you. All right. Now you can continue. There's not really much else to say.
So she said, people our age have never experienced American prosperity in our adult lives, which is why so many millennials are embracing democratic socialism. Alter also claims that Ocasio-Cortez's adulthood was defined by financial debt and climate change. No wonder she and her peers are moving left.
Isn't financial debt and climate change hashtag first world problems? I don't think poor people in sub-Saharan Africa are experiencing A, climate change, or B, mounting college debt.
Oh my god.
Is there some university in sub-Saharan Africa I'm not aware of that's charging, you know, three camels and a, I don't know, and a bottle of water every day?
to go learn sand studies? That was racist. I'm sorry.
Yeah, how dare you?
So
that was climate, not climatist. What's it called? Topography-esque? I can't think of the word.
Geography-esque?
Topographic-esque. Anyway, before we get too deep into that nonsense, if this is the reason, quote unquote, millennials are embracing democratic socialism, i.e. this perceived notion that they have not experienced prosperity in their entire adult lives, is this not yet another indictment of the entirety of our education system? If this is something they genuinely believe, and I'm not sure if they genuinely believe it or they're using borderline retarded excuse to take over the entire economy and most of the things in it. But if they genuinely believe it, then the school system has failed them on epic terms. It has just failed them in ways where it's not even fair to call it an education system anymore. It is plainly a system for propaganda and control. If this is what the students come out believing about the world, we live in the most prosperous, healthiest, wealthiest time in human history. And millennials like Representative Ocasio-Cortez and Charlotte Alter and myself have experienced nothing but unfathomable wealth. and even substantial more wealth than our parents or our grandparents, or especially our great-grandparents. But in terms of human history, just an insane amount of wealth. Not the least of which is just the internet. Just the internet. Leave aside everything else, just the internet is an abundance that is impossible to calculate. That AOC and Charlotte Alter and others have experienced. She was tweeting this, by the way, from her iPhone onto Twitter. So enough said there. Justin, do you have a rant about this?
Well, it's interesting to me because you've already sort of gone into, I don't know, would you have used the word insidious to characterize the school system, or were you not going quite the conspiratorial route? You're well, just saying that they're incompetent.
It is hard at this point for me to maintain my non-conspiratorial ways, because at some point, people have to be aware of how effed up they're creating the children these days. The teachers, the principals, the government, the whomever has to be aware how they are destroying the minds of young people if this is what they come out believing on the other side.
Yeah, and there's an interesting discussion here, a tension about what individuals are aware and what individuals aren't aware because of the sort of perpetuation of the psychological trauma and the belief system. And I don't have the answer. I've never had the answers to that question, right? Like, who are in control of this and who aren't? There are a lot of true believers out there who are teachers, because what they're really stoking here, what this really is, and I think I mentioned this last on my solo episode. I don't remember. I've talked about this all the time. But what they're stoking is the fires of envy. This is all an envy-based psychology, a second-handed psychology. And what I mean by that is, it's not like this cool Zack Snyder thing where I just said cool Zack Snyder thing. Can you tell I've been listening to Zack Snyder for 2 days straight?
It's awesome.
It's not a cool Zack Snyder thing where he's like, okay, if that's what you want to do, that's cool. Like you do your thing, Bill Gates. That's cool. It's not like that. It's like, oh, Bill Gates has that money and I don't have that money. Well, I've never experienced prosperity because that's what American prosperity is. They have this idea that prosperity is everyone having the same exact amount of things. They don't look at it as, and this is what you're talking about with education, they don't look at it as the history of the world, where they say, oh, well, back in the day where there was feudalism, the fucking poor were sleeping with the pigs, right? They were literally covered in mud. You know, they don't watch Game of Thrones and go, oh, well, that's what we would be like if we didn't have American prosperity. We'd be
dragons?
Yes, exactly, dragons. No, exactly. They do look at that and they go, why the fuck do I not have dragons? That's the culture we're living in. We look at Khaleesi and we go, why don't I have dragons? Well, first of all, dragons aren't real. No, they miss that point. They miss the point that, as you're saying, our poor have color TVs, refrigerators, iPhones, and Wi-Fi. What and the fuck are you complaining about? And what?
$4 antibiotics.
I missed it. One more time.
$4 antibiotics.
Yes, 100%. Exactly. But they say, oh, well, I don't have as much as so-and-so, therefore I've never experienced prosperity. And this is what you're saying, where it's the lack of an education. But I don't think that historical, I don't think they're intentionally dropping the history. I just think they're intentionally stoking envy, which of course then you have to ignore the history. So I do think this is intentional, because if you raise the envy, what are people going to vote for? Oh, well, government is going to fix the inequity.
That's right. I will have someone else, because I'm too much of a coward to do it. I will have someone else take stuff from people and give it to me.
Because
I don't think it's even give it to me. I think that this is exactly what Rand talks about in The Age of Envy. This is hatred of the good, right? This isn't I want something. This is you have values, you should be destroyed because I hate that others have something, right? Because that's what this is.
All these socialist leaders end up becoming wealthy because of this, which is my point. I will take stuff from other people. I will have other people take stuff so that I can have it.
Well, in the leaders, but I think that the emotional connection that they're having here, the thing that's stunting the folks who get seduced by AOC, is this hatred of the good, right? It's automatically assumed that that having things is evil, right? The fact that that Bezos has all this wealth means he is evil and he must be destroyed. And it's not he must be destroyed so I can have his shit, right?
I don't know. I mean, you keep
I don't think so.
That.
If you ask, people aren't saying give me free education, right? They're saying take that money and give, you know, and to make us look good, give it to other people, right?
At William, unequivocally, they're saying give me free education. Unequivocally, they're saying I should have free healthcare. Unequivocally, they're saying I should have free puppies and kittens and ice cream and everything else. Look at the list of demands from. Was it Sarah Lawrence College recently of the students who basically took over the dean's office and said essentially like, you should give us free education, you should give us free housing, you should give us free food, you should give us free shelter, you should give us free everything, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Of course they're saying that. Of course they're saying take it from them and give it to me. And it has to do with envy, but it also has to do with pure narcissism. Like, I deserve these things because I'm me, and they don't deserve them because they're them. Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But it's all of these things. It comes from that. Sorry to be.
I mean, how do we
not? Little kids are literally saying those things.
Yeah, I mean, and Bernie Sanders. It's not like Bernie Sanders is going around saying, "I'm going to run on the platform of taking everything from the rich." Like, his entire platform is free education, isn't it?
That's right.
I mean, so yeah. But here's the interesting tension between what the two
but
of you are
how
saying.
How many of those voters are of education age? So you're right. You're right, Daniel. We both can be right here. We could, but that's not who's voting for these people. College people.
You
don't
are
vote.
Both right, and I was going to explain how you're both right.
Fine, explain how I'm right.
And okay, I would explain how you're right. Both right, because there's an interesting tension here. There's an interesting tension between this entitlement that Daniel's talking about and this low self-esteem that William is talking about. And the low self-esteem is, I don't deserve things, so nobody else deserves things, so fucking take it from them. And then somehow that also leads to an entitlement, which is the low self-esteem leads to, I can't do it myself, but I want these things, so I should have them. Do you see what I'm talking about, this tension? This is the middle ground between what you guys are saying.
Yeah. Fine.
I don't have the answer psychologically how it gets there, but that's what it is.
Yeah.
I'm not good enough to earn this, so no one else deserves to have it, but also I need this to survive. You're welcome.
I don't know. Continue on. William, continue ranting.
I think that's it. I think it's just, this comes from envy and the hatred of the good. This is a complete blank out when it comes to the world that we live in and all the things that we have, the modern society that we have built and the immeasurable wealth we have, especially in the West. This is a complete failure of putting things into the proper context and even looking at what things can be or should be, right? They're imagining a world where everyone is equally miserable rather than a world where people can earn whatever they are willing to work for.
I agree completely, and I think that's a good way to sum things up here. I can't really think of anything else to say about this. Let's move on. That sound good, William?
Yeah, let's do it.
Yeah, I'll take that as a yes. Let's move on. So you better be ready with the drop right now, William, because we're gonna head into the Hopeful Romantic with JML. Focused on. If you enjoy our discussions here and you want to be a participant in them, please join our Discord channel. If you go to themidside.com/podcast, click on any episode link. There's a link to joining Discord in every episode post. And when you join, you can discuss with us directly. There's even a Patreon exclusive channel, and we've been testing it. Eventually, probably soon, maybe, I don't know, you'll be able to listen in live on episodes at a certain Patreon level. For the review this week, I want to talk about a Hulu original show that we talked about in Trailer Takedown, and it finally premiered. They're doing like one episode a week. Finally sat down and watched it. It's The Act. That is the show about that girl, Gypsy Rose, who her mother convinced her she had all these things to keep her in captivity, you know, these disabilities and such. And then eventually it ended with the mother being murdered by some boy that Gypsy Rose met, some man that Gypsy Rose met on the internet. My immediate reaction to The Act is, within 5 minutes, I was like, Joey King deserves an Emmy for this. I don't know if she'll get one. They're probably more likely to nominate Patricia Arquette because she's so beloved. But Joey King's performance in this was tremendous. Now, I've already seen a documentary on this, so maybe this is sort of what affected me. But as I continued watching, I became less and less interested. And again, maybe this is my sense of life, as we've seen over on the show over and over again. It's just, I found myself not compelled to continue to watch this. It's just this mother mistreating her kid, and she's a terrible person, and she's clearly a terrible person. And I can see where they're setting everything up, and I can't really fault this technically. Like, the writing is very competent. The acting, as I said, is very good. The directing, I don't know. It's obviously, it's more television-based because it's a television show, even though it's streaming. But I can't really fault this technically. I can't really say this is a bad show. It's just an issue of if you want to engage with that or not. And I think it's very interesting, Daniel and William, that these are the kind of shows, this is what's popular now, that this is what is selling and what people want to watch. Why would you want to watch this story? Well, why is this appealing to people?
Well, Justin, I have a question for you. Is this what's popular, or are we just back in the 70s? I mean, this is what 70s cinema was, right? Like, it was really crazy, depressing, and grotesque, and twisted, and, you know, this is what the 70s was. Are we just in the 70s again? Is this just a cycle we're going through?
To answer your question, false dichotomy, bro. I think both are true.
Yeah, it's someone observed the other day, I forget who the writer was, but like, they said something like, does Netflix have like a crime problem? And what they meant was, like, the most popular shows on Netflix and what's increasingly getting picked up are all these like serial killer, mass murder, people are dying, people are being abused, really dark shows. And the question the article poses is essentially like, is Netflix responding to something, or are they pushing something, or is it both? Justin, false dichotomy, right?
Right. Oh, 100%. That's a false dichotomy.
Well,
bro,
we know. Yeah. We know from market research and how television works that some of the most loyal viewers are women in that magical demo, right? And women in that magical demo, they love them their serial killer shows, right? And this is just, I would guess, without knowing, and I don't know that Netflix has made this public, but I would guess that Netflix leans pretty female, right? The most loyal viewers are going to be female, and they have.
Why
that
would
demo.
You make that? What? Where is that coming? I think it's an interesting claim. I'd like you to unpack that a little bit more.
Well, because what?
Careful.
What I observe is that most folks, well, most guys, when they watch a show, they will sit down and watch a show, right? But for most women, they can have like the iPad going with YouTube or with Netflix going, and they'll just watch, they'll just binge watch shows while they're doing other things. And that's not exactly, it's just a trend. I'm not saying it's a male-female thing necessarily, but If you tend to be more of the kind of person who can just have something on in the background or watch it, and you're female, you're going to be hooked on those shows, and that's just I mean, we can see the evidence for this in which TV networks covers those kinds of shows and the audience and commercials that they show on there. They must be hitting that target demo because those are what those commercials are showing. Even when I sit down to my Hulu, I've never once watched a reality show or a crime drama or a crime dramatization show. It's always suggesting them to me. Always.
Well, let me ask this, because this is interesting to me as far as these type of shows. I think this type of show, like the story, the act, like I said, I watched a documentary on, and you know, I watched the Ted Bundy tapes on Netflix. Now, I did also watch Mindhunter, which is sort of like, that's as far as I'll go. But what's interesting to me about watching these as documentaries is, to me, that's more informative, where it's like, this is what is going on with these stories. Here's all the information about them. Now, with Mindhunter, I find that interesting because it's dramatizing the process of learning about these people. But a show like The Act, or a show like Dinner, the One You Loved by Ryan Murphy, about the O.J. Simpson case. You know, and The Act is, they're going to be doing something similar for different ones. And they're doing the Gypsy Rose thing right now. And Ryan Murphy just did Versace as well. There's something very experiential about that. So I've seen the documentary, but now what this show is doing is showing what it was like to live every day in that life that Gypsy Rose and her mother had. And William, to sort of defend you a little bit, are you saying that that's more female because it's more emotional and more experiential, and guys typically can just be know the facts and say, okay, I don't need to know that on an experiential level. I don't need to know that on an emotional level, where it more appeals to women to experience that on an emotional level? Is that what you're trying to say?
Yeah. Yeah, that's getting more to what I'm trying to say. I'm trying to say that this is more feeding into a particular demographic, which tends to skew female, and that those are the ones I would expect to be the most loyal watchers of these sort of shows. And what I think what this, again, to get back to the false dichotomy, bro, like, is this being pushed or is this are they responding to market? I think that Netflix, they have a tremendous amount of information, like demographic information and what people want to see. And they've found a market and they're exploiting it. Now, will they find other markets? Hopefully. I mean, I'm hoping they'll find us sci-fi fans and start giving us some great sci-fi. But, you know, they've sort of done that with anime, right? They've had some pretty good shows that took off and then they provided them in other markets, and I guess they did all right because they're still around, they're getting renewed so with anime and animation. So I think that part of this is us seeing it because it's what's making news, but the other thing is I think they're doing this in other markets as well, or they're creating other niches and markets for particular kinds of shows. We're just seeing this one because it's all over the place.
Daniel, what do you think of what William's saying and this idea of documentaries versus dramatizations of these sort of traumatic experiences, traumatic real life events?
I think if there's a nuanced distinction, it's that the things like The Act or Ted Bundy, I haven't watched Ted Bundy, so I'm not going to speak to that. But what I imagine is there's more dramatization of the actual thing, like the actual doing of the thing, the abuse, the whatever, than the documentaries. So, but for instance, one of the reasons it doesn't fall into that bucket is the O.J. Simpson thing. There was no dramatization of the. If there had been, I would have been out within the first 5 minutes. I'm not interested in that. That's not the component of reality that I think is ripe for recreating and demonstrating. The scary trend to me is the more and more in-depthness into the actual recreation of the murders or the acts or the abuse, the whatever it is.
Yeah. Well,
and I'm not going to say if that's female or male, because Adam Carolla in 50 years will all be chicks. The blurring line is getting blurrier.
Right, and that's part of the larger discussion, is if this is appealing to men, what is it doing to men, all of that, so on and so forth. You know, that's an ongoing discussion we have on the show. So, you know, in summary, The Act is one of those type of shows. it doesn't appeal to me. Like, I'm having a hard time in general. Like, I pick up a show and then I continue it. I'm just sort of like, okay. I mean, I even, William, and I'll give you a brief 30 seconds to reply to this, but Midsider Michael had been texting me about the Orville season 2, and I put on a random episode from season 2, and I'm still not into it. I watch it, and it's the same problem where I get like a quarter of the way through this, and I'm just like, whatever, I don't care. This is so derivative and uninteresting. And that's the way I feel about most shows nowadays, is I don't have any sort of desire to continue. It's never like, oh, I really want to watch the next one. It's just sort of like, okay, I saw that.
Yeah, I understand the feeling. Like, obviously, I don't have that with the Orville. I think the two-parter, was it called Identity? You need, if you can't, if you, this entire, all the first two seasons have been leading up to the Identity. I think it's called the Identity, part one and two. It's the two-parter. If I got the name wrong, someone will correct me. But that whole, the whole show was set up for this, this two-parter story arc, and it was good. It's done well. And you're saying that of course you can find similar themes in TNG. It is a parody after all. So you can find it in Star Trek in general, and TNG in particular. You can find episodes where maybe some things are done better. But for me, the Orville is an interesting mix of comedy while taking the sci-fi series. It's really found the balance in the second season. So I'm definitely hooked on that show. But in general, I get the feeling that you're talking about. Like, yeah, I've tried to put on shows as well on Netflix. And it's just like there's no good, interesting stories, well put together stories out there. And you can see that. I mean, we're talking about the pattern right now. When you're telling real life stories, you've clearly run out of imagination.
But it's the thing I think Justin is picking up on, and the thing I'll reassert is that, you know, the Orville may have these parts that are good, but is it, you know, is it heroin or is it methadone? For lack of a better, less horrible analogy. Point being, like, I can watch shows, something Zack Snyder's done or Nolan or even like The West Wing. I know you don't like it, but like The West Wing. And there's greatness to those things. And then I watch shows that are derivative of those things or have elements of them. And I go, well, I can see these good elements to it, but it all just feels like methadone. Like, it all just feels like, you know, it takes some of the component parts of the thing that was good and just gives me the slow drip so that I'll continue watching. But I don't know if it's actually good.
Yeah, wow. Man. I mean, if I'm going to do drugs, I want to shoot that pure shit right into my veins.
Yeah. Well, maybe let's put a pin on this and we give Justin some homework.
I'll watch Identity, all right?
I was going to say, it's going to be hard because you didn't watch the rest of the show, so you're going to miss some of the subtlety. But just know that the one character that it focuses on has been, you know, been a part of every B story from about halfway through the first season all the way through the second season, and they did a really good job with that.
Okay, all I know is the episode I watched, even Christine, who doesn't know much about narrative and how to predict things, knew that the main character, Seth MacFarlane's girlfriend, wasn't actually his girlfriend and was basically deceiving him. And then it turned out she was one of the evil aliens. And I was like, this is just the inverse of when they tried to convince Kira she was a Kardashian on DS9. Yep. And then they went into, he gets trapped on the planet with her, which has been done with like Janeway and Chakotay and Voyager. And I was like, this is just a mashup of like 8 different Star Trek episodes in one.
Well, it is a parody. So you have to be prepared for that. But know that the joy comes from the execution and the interesting twists and the comedy. Like, that's where the joy comes from in something like the Orville. But let's put a pin on it and talk about it next show.
Okay, we'll talk about it whenever I get to Identity. And right now, Daniel kind of gave me a nice little lead in. I'm assuming it was on purpose. I'm not going to go into too much depth right now because Midsider Alfred pointed out that this would be a great like Patreon exclusive episode. So I'm going to do an in-depth thing on Patreon about everything I've learned from Zack Snyder and what the whole experience has been at going to this 3-day event. And right now I've only gone through 2 of the 3 days, so I don't really want to give a full picture of it right now, but there's a lot of interesting things going on as far as seeing what Zack Snyder is actually like. It's very much like hanging out with him, which is interesting. Seeing the way the fans are, That's sort of interesting. And the sort of foreshadowing I'll give with that is it's very much what we've expected, but even more. It's even more extreme. So I don't think there's anything surprising there. And, you know, he hasn't really said anything. Yes, exactly. Good. Good use of that drop. And you've been waiting. How long have you been waiting in this episode to use that, William?
I've been waiting for you to mention Zack Snyder so I could do it. I got to clean it up a little bit, but...
Yeah, that was actually from an interaction with him, which I will explain that on the Patreon thing as well. And, you know, there really hasn't been too much revelatory about what he's talked about and everything. The one sort of really surprising thing that he said is that Watchmen the movie has the same morality as Watchmen the book. And I've been trying to wrap my head around that. And I talked to Daniel about it. And I talked to Midsider Michael. And I don't think any of us has come to a conclusion yet, because that's a really interesting statement. The other thing is, and this is sort of what's disappointing to me, is it's been more of a discussion about how to film and his approaches to that without a discussion of the ideas behind it. Yesterday, he sort of started talking about with the why and the deconstructivism of, do you want to say that word correctly, Daniel?
Deconstructivism.
Thank you. Of Watchmen and, you know, Batman versus Superman, where he said the why is what matters. But he didn't go into like where his why is based fundamentally. So I want to ask you guys something. Should I straight out during the question and answer session tonight raise my hand to try and ask a question about Ayn Rand's influence on him? Do you think that's too backing him into a corner? Because I've noticed another thing he does is he doesn't mention the word individualism, and he's very cagey about taking a specific stance.
Doesn't he have a quote from somewhere, like he said he had an Ayn Rand aesthetic?
Yes. And he brought up the Fountainhead. And breaking news, he said he wants Philip Glass, and he's talked to Philip Glass about scoring the Fountainhead.
I don't know. Personally, I don't think you can. I think it would be better for you, because remember, you're in a hostile environment here. I would be better to focus on the ideas and how he executes themes in his storytelling. Like, that would be a more interesting question to me than saying, tell me about Ayn Rand, because then you sound like... you're not going to get the answer. You're not going to. He's got to be cagey in that environment.
If you're going to ask him about Ayn Rand, I would do it much more in the informal setting, like you did about the other thing that you'll talk about on the Patreon exclusive episode. And I would frame it back to him with the question. You know, you said in an interview that you had an Ayn Rand aesthetic. Would you mind elaborating on that? I think I also have an Ayn Rand aesthetic. And the reason you would put that last part in there is so you can sort of direct his caginess, in a sense.
Yeah. What I'm trying to do, though, is I really want to change the overall narrative. And what I mean by that is I don't know why people aren't talking about story with him more, and I'd really love to have the conversation in these panel discussions to be more about story and less about, like, oh man, isn't it really cool that you did a deconstructivist approach? Okay, yeah, you did a deconstructivist approach, but what was the end result of it? Do you get what I'm saying?
Well, how about this? I don't know if he answers questions about the previous movies, but throw back the Watchmen thing. Say, hey, I've been thinking a lot about what you said about the book and the movie sharing the same morality. I'm curious then if you think the distinction is a metaphysical one and not an epistemological one, and see what he says. He might go, those are big words, I don't know. Or he might go, what? Like, someone asked me about the metaphysical difference in the universe? Those are some, sort of like objectivist buzzwords in a certain sense.
Yeah, I get what you're saying. I don't know how to ground that more in Batman versus Superman. So I was going to ground it in that whole epic line, right? The line of, you don't owe this world a thing, you never did. And I'm thinking maybe there's a way I can bring that line up and just say, you know, what was the thought behind the inclusion of that? What kind of a statement were you trying to make on heroism and
See, I don't like any of those. I guess just me personally, if I was sitting in the audience, I would be more about how did you construct the story to come to that moment? Did you have that moment? Did you have that moment in mind first, or you know, did the story kind of like, you know, did you write come up with the story and the plot and then come up with a quote like that, right?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That's a better way of saying it, right? Like, okay, that's a line that really stands out to me and really impacts me. How did that line develop? Is that a line that you knew from the beginning, or did that sort of develop organically as you were writing the script?
Right. Cause then that focuses on what you want to hear, which is about the story and the construction of the story, right? And how you get that story into a script and into a film.
Right, Aaron. How does that scene even affect Clark's development?
Oh yeah, that'd be a great way to frame it.
Right. Yeah. Okay. I think I'm gonna try and ask that question tonight. Is you know, that line, that scene with the mother where she says, "You don't owe this world a thing." How did that affect Clark's development, and how does that affect our understanding of the story? Right. Does that sound good, Daniel?
Yeah, sounds good to me.
Sure.
Okay, because I just want to kind of try and direct the discussion a little bit more. But let's direct this discussion a little bit more, and let's talk about some movies that are going to be coming out. As always, Trailer Takedown is released on Saturday mornings on the website, themidside.com or themidside.com/podcast. You can go there and watch the trailers before the episode, during the episode. During Trailer Takedown, you can pause, listen to what we say about the trailer, watch it, or watch it before we talk about that trailer.
Trailer Takedown.
First trailer?
Sorry, we got two there.
Yeah, first I know. I thought that trailer was intentional. All right, I thought that was intentional. So I was just rolling with it. I was like, oh. I was like, that was kind of cool.
Yeah, it was cool. Maybe I'll do that again.
First trailer is Toy Story 4, the full trailer. This was submitted in Discord by Midsider Frank. We've talked about Toy Story 4 before because we did the teaser trailers. This sort of just added more details to, you know, where Forky is involved with this, how they end up at the carnival. Bo Peep's involved more here. I'm just having sort of fatigue. I'm still going to see this movie because I'm curious about it. But I kind of have Toy Story narrative fatigue, and I'm interested in what Daniel has to say about it, where it's just kind of like, where do we really need to continue this besides the fact that they're going to print money with this? So this is a hug, but it's sort of like a, do I really want to keep hugging this to the point that if there is a Toy Story 5, I honestly may not hug it.
Hug.
There you go. That's a good one, Daniel.
Yeah. Weird plot, right? So Bonnie creates a toy out of a fork and some pipe cleaner and some popsicle sticks, and he comes to life. There's like a moment where he's like, why am I alive? And he like deals with his existential nature. Weird. And then in the meantime, they run into Bo Peep, and she's like a leader of some antique toy gang who wants to be part of a circus and not part of a playroom. So Toy Story,
well, they're the forgotten toys.
They're forgotten toys. Yeah. So Toy Story 3 got into some really deep, you know, S about life and death and God and some weird things. And now this is getting into like existence and being and purpose. So it's interesting that they keep taking on more and more adult themes. And in fact, this trailer looked much more like it was cut for an adult audience than it was for a children's audience. So maybe they're trying to shift the audience from the current kids to the kids who grew up with Toy Story and bring them along. How that translates to an actual children's story, I don't know, because the thing that has always been great about Pixar is it was a great children's story that adults could enjoy because it had good plot structure, character development, etc. If they're making more films for adults, I don't know. And the reason I bring this up is because Pixar launched this like independent Pixar YouTube channel where they're releasing sort of like really weird shorts. And they're awful. compared to the official Pixar stuff. And they're very adult. Some of them have swearing in them. And it's just so, I don't know, like discordant or disjointed or something in my head, that I can't really get over it. So I'm going to hug this because I will see it. I see all the Pixar stuff, but I am certainly with you that I'm a bit more cautious about this than I am optimistic.
Hug?
So Daniel, are you saying that like Toy Story 10 is basically going to be Watchmen as Toy Story?
Yeah, kind of. Like
it'll
there might
be Buzz Lightyear Returns.
Stuff. Yeah. Like I don't really think Pixar is going all the way that direction, but they are making things that are more adult. And I don't know if I like that. That seems like mission creep, but
yeah, I think the story looks interesting. Maybe it's got a little bit of a sci-fi element, I guess, with the existential dread of being a toy. And then it looks like it might be focusing on Woody's choice of what he wants, what he values. So I don't know. It just looks interesting to me. I do agree with you guys. It's a strange tonal change, but this is just the preview. So is this preview for adults, maybe? This one, and the other one's more for kids. I don't know, but I'm tentatively going to hug this.
Hug. Second trailer.
Once Upon a Time in Hollywood is Quentin Tarantino's 9th film, which, by the way, can we talk about that for a second? Is there any other fucking director that when he makes a movie in the trailer, they say what number film it is? This is Steven Spielberg's 26th film. Like, what? Why are you so fucking important that it matters how many goddamn movies?
Well, there is a point to it, I think. Didn't he say at one point he's going to make like 10 movies or something and then he's done? So there's kind of like a countdown element to it.
Okay, so are we going to do that before every season? This is Tom Brady's 43rd year on this planet. He said he's only going to play till he's 45.
Now,
like, where does it end?
You say that, except that they basically do. So
every season is, could this be his last season? They do that every time.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, anyway, this is a movie about Leonardo DiCaprio playing an actor in the 70s, and Brad Pitt plays his stunt double, and it's sort of like meta about Hollywood. Now, here's the thing with Quentin Tarantino and Quentin Tarantino trailers. This trailer was a good trailer, okay? It sucked me in. It was amusing. They had good jokes. There were good performances. And it made me want to see the movie. So as a trailer, I can't really fault this trailer. But Tarantino is one of these guys that whenever I sit down to watch his movies, after I've seen the trailers and the concept, I don't like the way he executes them. It's just they're overly long. The word dour is jumping into my head. So I don't know if I'm ever actually going to take the time to see this. It's just like, look, Django Unchained, the trailer looks great. I've heard great things about the performances, but I've still never seen it because it's Tarantino. So I'm going to tackle this.
Tackle.
William, does it like fuck with you, like when you don't know what I'm going to say, so you don't know what button to push right away?
Yes, it's I'm juggling, waiting to see which button to press.
Daniel,
just like a woman. Yeah. So,
by the way, sneakily, that was the most misogynistic comment this entire episode. I'd like to point out. Tried to slide that one under the radar. Push?
Daniel's low key misogyny. That needs to be the title of the episode.
Low key misogyny. Yeah. I can't believe you're going to tackle this. That's interesting. Tarantino, I have a love-hate relationship with Tarantino as well, and they're usually within the same movie. Most of his movies have moments of sheer, total, unbelievable brilliance in them.
Agree completely.
Sheer, total moments of absolute, unequivocal stupidity.
Agree completely.
And I don't know. There's enough in it usually that I watch them and engage with them. The movie Inglourious Basterds comes to mind. Like the opening scene with Christoph Waltz as the Nazi in the house is just like, you could make that a short film and it might be the best short film ever made. It's ridiculous. And then there are moments with machine guns and Nazis that are just strange and weird. And
I don't know that fucking basement bar scene that goes on forever.
Yeah, exactly. And you're like, what are you doing? Can we just move this along? Yeah. So I'm going to see this. I'm interested. It's definitely a hug. But I know I'm going to see it with the idea that there are going to be moments that are phenomenal and moments where I'm bored out of my mind. And that's Tarantino. And you take him for what he is. So hug.
Hug.
All right. I get what all of you guys are saying, but looking at this trailer, it looks super interesting. It looks fun. I'm hoping this is one of those Tarantino movies, like a Kill Bill or Inglourious Basterds, that I'm going to enjoy overall. And so I'm going to hug this.
Hug.
When your main character is gay.
I don't know. They did a gay joke, but I mean, that's Hollywood, right? If you can't make a gay joke in Hollywood, where can you make it?
I guess.
West Hollywood? No, when you're talking about Kill Bill, I think one of the reasons Kill Bill works is because it's exactly what Daniel just said. It was originally supposed to be one movie, but it was so long that he cut it into two. So you have one movie of what Daniel's talking about and the other movie of the good stuff. So one movie is sort of the bad, stupid stuff, and one movie is the good stuff, and it works in that way. Yep. So the first one you can watch, and it's just, you can turn off your brain, you can just be like, this is like mindless fucking action, it's the absurdity that goes on too long. And then the second one is the actual story, where you get into this idea of, this is a mother trying to figure out how to best protect her daughter. And it's a very compelling story, and I think that works because he interestingly split out those two sides. Daniel, have you seen both?
Yeah, I've seen both.
Would you agree with that?
In total, they make 91% of a good movie.
Yeah,
the two movies combined.
But do you agree with my assessment of the way it's sort of broken out in that way?
Yeah, I don't think everything in the first one is going on forever stuff. I would take a portion of that and a big portion of the second one and make a different movie, but it's not my movie. It's Quentin Tarantino's movie.
Right. So. And again, that end scene with her and Bill, played by, he's amazing. David Carradine, right. That scene is like one of those iconic, amazing Tarantino scenes.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Final trailer.
Lucy in the Sky is a sci-fi astronaut movie starring Natalie Portman and John Hamm. Or it looks like Natalie Portman's in space with John Hamm. And then I think this is set in like the 70s or the 60s, maybe. I don't know. And then she comes back.
No.
And she starts cheating on her, what'd you say, Daniel?
It's got to be the 80s or
80s? 90s. Okay, fine. It's the, whatever. Well, some time period in the past where it was epic to go to space. Not that it's not epic now, but culturally we made a bigger deal out of it, what I'm making. So she comes back from space with John Hamm, and she ends up cheating on her husband with John Hamm, and because she's having an existential crisis because she saw the entire universe. And because she saw that, it made her want to fuck John Hamm, which I think people want to just fuck John. Women just want to fuck John Hamm in general. I don't think they need to see the entirety of the universe. But she is Natalie Portman, so maybe she needs more to be convinced to fuck John Hamm. Here's the thing about this. I generally have a rule that I've said before on this show. John Hamm tends to take good roles. But that seems to be at odds with the tone and pacing of this trailer. This seems like naturalism to the nth degree, but I've never seen John Hamm take a naturalistic role. So I'm kind of torn here. And part of me thinks maybe he just took this because he missed being on Mad Men, because this is a period piece where he gets a woman to cheat on her husband with him. It's just like, it's like he just was like, hey, I haven't done Mad Men in a while, let me do that again. So maybe that's why he took it, but I'm thinking maybe there's something redeeming here and they're marketing this as more of a naturalistic piece. I don't know. I'm kind of torn, so I need to see more to know if I'm going to tackle this or not. So this is a very, 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 very
hug?
Exactly. Daniel?
I don't need to see Black Swan in space. Tackle.
Tackle.
See, that's my worry. That's my worry. William?
You know, I love sci-fi, but this just looked weird and not in a good way. Is this going to be an anti-hero story about someone who did something bad? That's the feeling I get. I don't know anything about this story, but also I cannot put my finger on it. Natalie Portman looks like a different actress in the trailer. Who does she look like? She looks like someone from the 80s or 90s, and I can't remember, but she looks like a different actress in this, which I guess
is good.
You don't
think she looks like Keira Knightley?
Maybe. I don't know.
A little bit,
but there's someone else.
I remember that was the Star Wars thing back in the day.
Maybe, but like, I'm sure the performance is going to be fine. I'm sure the way it's going to be put together is going to be fine, but the story looks so questionable. So I think I took the other side.
Oh, I know who
this.
She looks like. Contact.
Cool. Yes.
Oh.
Yeah.
What's her name? Jodie Foster?
Foster.
She looks like Jodie Foster in Contact.
Yep.
Wow.
Except for the wrong color hair, but that's what it is. But I'm going to take the other side of that coin. This trailer did not convince me to see it, so I'm going to questionably tackle this.
Tackle?
You both said science fiction. I didn't get a science fiction vibe from this at all. I mean, she's an astronaut, but that doesn't make it science fiction.
Did she actually go to space and fuck John Hamm?
Well,
okay.
No,
maybe
but a story about an astronaut is not necessarily science fiction.
Okay, that's true. I agree with you. But the way this is cut is so trippy and weird. It seemed like a science fiction or suspense story, right? I don't know what this is. I don't know what this is.
Black Swan in space.
Yeah.
It just seemed like it was cut like she was descending into psychosis.
All right, all I know is my Google overlords. I just Googled it right now, and it says drama/science fiction, okay? So my Google overlords tell me it's science fiction.
Based on this trailer, I would strongly disagree with Google. Yes, I said it. I disagree with Google.
Okay, so this is the description. After an awe-inspiring experience in outer space, an astronaut returns to Earth and starts to lose touch with reality in a world that now seems too small. There has to be something. This is, again, this is my John Hamm principle. And this trailer is not giving me enough. There has to be more to this awe-inspiring experience. It has to be some sort of science fiction element that is what changes the story.
Okay, well, if she experiences the Venom suit in space, then maybe this is going to be an interesting story. But if she just saw the world and she's like, I don't want to be back on Earth anymore. Don't care. Also, Lucy in the Sky, isn't that like a drug reference?
Well, right, and I think that's what they're going for here, is the idea that whatever is entered in her brain changes her experience with the world in the way LSD does.
Okay, whatever. I'm not seeing it.
Like I said, I agree with you, Daniel. It very much could be Black Swan in space, but John Hamm has never gone in that direction, so I'd be very surprised if he took that kind of role. All right, let's go into the end of this episode here. Final segment, Life on the Midside. Take a good look around. Does life really suck? Are we just complaining? I hope that this mic is on. Because I'm on a roll here. I hope this is making some sense. I hope that you throw up your hands and sing it and tell all the haters that they should just shut up and All right, that was a terrible transition, by the way. I know it, audience. I know it. Stop making fun of me out there. But I am fading fast right now. I'm fading fast. I need food. I probably should have been sleeping more, but
and you need
that's
Zack
what happened.
Snyder tonight, so.
Again, I'm meeting Zack Snyder again tonight.
Ugh.
It's so passe now. It's
hashtag
so boring.
LA problems.
Yeah, hashtag LA problems. It's not LA problems. These people come from all over the world. And this is the sort of problem I'm having with this event, is it's made me realize something with social media and everything. Because there are literally people standing up and being like, oh yeah, Dania, and this is like a girl on Twitter, says hi, Zach. And he's like, oh, hey, she's cool. Let her know she's cool. Which is probably just Zack Snyder being Zack Snyder. But it made me realize we now live in a society where it's so second-handed that attention seeking is such a basic skill. So that's not really, I'm not an attention seeker. I don't have that sort of skill. So in a society where that is a skill, how do you get attention when it is rational and healthy to? because I'm just looking at all these people. And like, I was literally talking to Deborah Snyder and I asked her about the Fountainhead movie. And she started talking, I was like, you know, what's the deal with that? She started talking about all the, you know, the scouting they're going to be doing for Army of the Dead and everything and how they're going to be going into casting for that. And some fucking other kid obnoxiously came over and was like, oh yeah, tell us about the casting for that. Completely derailed it. And I never got the answer to my question because of that. And I just walked away from the conversation because then they started talking about Army of the Dead. Like, how do you exist in that space?
I don't know.
I think you just flex your muscles, Justin. If you want to seek attention, just take your shirt off, start flexing. You'll get some attention.
Yeah, maybe you and Zach can go lifting.
That'd be so sweet.
So attention seeking as a basic skill. I think there's two sides to this. One is an unhealthy side, and one is maybe a healthy side, although I disagree with it. But the healthy version is what I'd refer to almost as like personal brand building in an era of social media, which is we know we live in a culture that's more connected. We know we live in a culture where to some degree, our online personas are just that. They are personas that need to be built if we want success in certain areas of our life. Now, I'm not saying that you must participate in that. There are ways to not participate in it, and that's totally fine, and it's probably healthier, honestly. But if you're going to participate in it, then you do have to think consciously about the persona you want to portray online and consciously about what you're going to do online. But here's the kicker, and here's the thing that I think is the secret of all personal brand building, which is just be a moral person pursuing your values, and you will have a better than average, in fact, probably good online personal brand. Just be who you are, but think about your values hierarchically. Think about your self-interest rationally. Think about your long-term self-interest. And if you want to put that online, go ahead. But if you do that, you will have a fine online brand persona. And if people are drawn to that in a certain sense, I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I think it's interesting to learn from people who are living a good life, friends of mine who live a good life and do things in a way that I see as valuable, and I learn from that. And same thing, if you can teach people, but you're not doing it in a way that's, I need their attention in order to feel successful, or I need their attention in order to feel fulfilled in my life, then it's perfectly healthy, I think. Justin, thoughts about that?
I don't disagree with anything you're saying, but maybe I'm not executing that well enough because I've just found that that's not very effective. I find that, and maybe this is just a greater problem I've had in my life. Like I said, even in those conversations, like I feel like I had more to say to Deborah and Zach than these people, but they just derail it because they're seeking attention in a way that they just want to be engaged in the conversation and they feel validated by the fact that they're being acknowledged.
Well, I think there's a way you can, you know, deftly jujitsu a situation like that. It's just about being assertive and kind of managing the conversation. I mean, one thing you could have done is, you know, let that answer happen. And then you can say, oh, and then, well, what about the casting for Fountainhead, right? It seems like a natural transition to me. I think that when someone comes in and they come in a little too aggressive like that in a conversation, just being there, giving them that acknowledgement, but then like turning the conversation back can kind of be a subtle way to get things back into a more productive or back to the area that you wanted to discuss. I think the danger is, so that's what I would recommend. The danger is to come off too aggressive, right? To answer, and I don't mean aggressive like punch him in the face, although I bet you consider doing that. I mean, like, come on.
I actually did. Very good. But I just wanted to punch that kid in the face so he went away.
But to come back in, like, instead of responding, what we should not do is respond to that interruption with an interruption of your own, right? Like, to come back and kind of turn, if he came in at a 5, for you to come in at a 6. I mean, that might get you a result, but it's not going to be the result you want.
100%. And that's the danger here, is I think that's what people do. What I've observed is it becomes that echo chamber where one person comes in at a 5, another comes in at a 6, and it just keeps escalating in that way.
Yeah. Yep.
And that's what I'm referring to. And that's kind of what's
Yeah, that's one thing from back in the day when I ran the social group in Baltimore, that it really helped me understand like how to steer conversations and the different sort of behaviors around that. And I think that's a skill you can cultivate just like anything else. So
I took this way too abstractly as a question. You were literally asking about that particular situation.
No, I meant in general. I mean, I'm taking William's being less more concrete, and you're being more abstract. And I'm saying the things William is saying is true about what you're saying. I'm just saying that happens everywhere too.
Yeah.
So I'm right in the middle.
The only thing I'll add is that there's not a ton you can do about someone who, as a presenter or a boss or someone doing a Q&A, who also doesn't know how to handle that kind of situation.
Right.
You might have a rational method for capturing their attention, but if they're bad at it, there's nothing you can do. As someone who manages people, for instance, and I'm having a conversation with someone, and another one of my direct reports comes in and starts asking me something, I will tell them, wait there, I'm handling this right now, and I'll finish handling what I'm handling, and then I'll go to that person. It's not as if I can jump back and forth. That's not possible. But if I was someone, you know, doing what Deborah Snyder was doing, it's just back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, and I'm going to inevitably forget what it is that I'm doing in the first place. So,
100%. And that is something I realized that she had forgotten the original thing. So I didn't like to be, again, I didn't want to, this isn't, I thought anything negative about her or Zach or anything. And I had a feeling you were going to say that as well, that it is largely dependent on the rationality of the people who are trying to manage all of this. And in the specific case of, you know, this sort of situation, it's just too much to manage, I think, even for, you know, someone like Zack Snyder, who is more sort of naive and he's more sort of benevolent with people. It's just difficult to manage in general. But I think in general, our culture hasn't figured out how to manage this sort of attention-seeking culture where we're still focused on whatever is that we're still focused on the squeaky wheel gets the grease. And that's the way social media is developed. So I just hope that one day we figure out, Daniel, as you're saying, how to rationally manage all of this. Because it used to be the gatekeepers, right? From the top down approach were the one who managed this. But now that that's sort of been blown up, we haven't figured out how to manage it. And I hope we do. Is that fair?
Yeah, yeah. But we won't.
But we won't. Thanks. Okay. So now you're playing the part of Alan Moore today.
Yes. Just today.
All right. Let's put a bow on this episode. So gentlemen, what did we learn this trip? William?
Well, I learned that if someone ever cheats on me, I can either cut my own finger and write their name or have the person throw a bottle at me. Those are the only two choices.
Daniel?
I learned that Representative Ocasio-Cortez and other Democratic socialists of her ilk are just envious, whiny little children who want nothing more than to take away from people something they either see as theirs or they see as not belonging to that person. And envy is horrible. It ruins everything.
You just learned that?
I learned it more this episode.
Okay.
Justin?
I learned that apparently there was a time traveler in the Massachusetts state legislature in the 70s.
Yeah, that's pretty impressive that Massachusetts was so ahead of the curve on being terrible. That takes some effort, and Massachusetts, you win the day in your effort to be terrible. Whatever you
We're
learned,
winning everything these days.
Title Town. That's right. What was I going to say? Oh, if whatever you learned this week, tell us on social media is at the Midside, and maybe you'll grab our attention, or maybe you won't. Who knows? But you can go to themidside.com/podcast, listen to all the recent episodes of Welcome to the Midside, including all the way back to from years and years ago. You know, you can see how culture has evolved or devolved or, lateral evolved or whatever it is over those years. And, you know, tweet us some of your favorite moments from those shows. I'd be curious since I don't remember doing any of them. While you're at themidside.com, you can go to /store and pick up your False Dichotomy Bro shirt and other merch.
Your Hail Snydra shirt.
Hail Snydra. That's right. And the classic logo tee, of course. And, click through and go to iTunes or Google Play and subscribe to the show if you're not doing that already. You can get the episodes delivered to you the moment Justin hits publish on Midside Monday. Leave a 5-star review while you're there. Help us move up the rankings, including thanks to Liberty.me for syndicating us, and that helps us move up the rankings as well because we get more libertarian listeners. We like you guys and gals, but probably mostly guys if you're libertarians. And patreon.com/themidside is where you can go and give us a few bucks every time we produce a piece of content. It really helps keep the lights on and helps us with hosting and microphones. As you can hear, Justin bought me a microphone finally, thanks to Patreon money. So we appreciate that. Helps increase the quality of the show. And Patreon, we also have some exclusive content from time to time, including apparently an upcoming exclusive discussion about what Justin learned from Zack Snyder. So if you want to be part of that, just give even a dollar an episode. That would really help. And we love our Patreon subscribers. Thank you very much. And if you can't do that, that's perfectly fine. We still love you too, but you should tell a friend about the show. We'd love even more if you told a friend or two or all of them about the show so the show grows. More Midsiders, more people looking at the craziness of the day, witnessing the farce with us here in the Midside. It's very important. So until next time, we love you a lot.
This concludes your journey into the Midside. I'm Justin M. Wisniewski, reminding you that if things get tough, take a step back and witness the farce.
Have a day.
I am so tired. I am legitimately that I'm going to pass out during Batman versus Superman. Last night during Watchmen, because remember, these are like 3-hour movies. Zack Snyder's sitting like 5 seats over from me. And I'm like, don't fall asleep. Don't fall asleep. Don't fall asleep. Can you imagine how insulting it would be to fall asleep during a movie when the director is like 5 seats over?
Adam Crowley has a great story about his agent falling asleep during a screening of his movie. So,
yeah. So that guy, kick that guy out. That guy, get him out right now.
Maybe get you tweeted by Snyder, though. Maybe you snap a photo and tweet it out and be like, super, super interested fan at the movie screening. Yeah, then you could at least gain Snyder infamy. Sninfamy.
Sninfamy.